This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So the Astros win again last night. Justin Verlander gets his 19th win of the season. Alex Bregman's going to be the one that is going to get the most MVP love on this team. We're about to do a segment on it right here. I think Justin Verlander is, by definition of valuable, the most valuable Astro, though, Seth. That's the one guy that if something were to happen to him between now and the start of the postseason where he couldn't pitch for some reason, I would have the most sinking feeling in my stomach if Verlander were not there than any other Astro.
Do you feel like he's the guy that brings you 1 to 2 wins every series?
I feel like the one thing the Astros have going for them that every other team going into the playoffs does not have is the combination of Verlander and Cole at the top of the rotation. Mm. And if you lose either one of those guys, that's why I think they're 1 and 2 in terms of being the most valuable guys on this team. If you lose either one of them, you lose the biggest chunk of what makes you a potential World Series champion. I think you can withstand losing any one of the guys that you have in the lineup, including Bregman, including Yordan Alvarez, including Michael Brantley, you know, Jose Altuve, who's actually won an MVP. I think you can withstand the loss of any one of those guys. And now if you start to lose a cluster of them, that becomes a different deal. But if we're just talking individual players, to me, Verlander's the most valuable Astro. That's who I would vote for if I were voting for a team MVP.
For team MVP?
Yeah.
I just have a hard time splitting up the pitchers from the position players because I also look at Bregman and think about just not just his individual games, but the great series that he's had in playoffs.
Yeah.
So those other 2 to 3 games in a series where Verlander's not pitching, then what does that, if Bregman's going on a run, then it all comes down to chance. I think it's fair to say that for one, Verlander, obviously the Cy Young for me. I guess that maybe it feels more obvious to me. I feel like some people feel with the argument that they're having about the Hall of Fame with Eli, where they don't even want to debate it. They're like, nope, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Did you just Verlander, end of story?
It's Verlander, end
period.
Of story. Verlander,
end of subject.
Mic drop, Verlander, no discussion.
Right.
But when it comes to MVP, that's a whole other story. His numbers are better than when he won the MVP in 2011.
The efficiency numbers are.
Yeah.
The raw numbers, he had 24 wins that year. He's not going to get 24 wins this year.
Nobody gives a damn about wins.
No, I don't think they do either. I his ERA is about the same, and his WHIP and his strikeouts are much, much better than they were. But I do think there's been a shift with the MVP since Verlander won it in 2011. I do think that more of the new voters are looking at the MVP as more of a hitter's award, and pitchers aren't nearly as prevalent infiltrating some of the voting, even though they're eligible for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll get votes. I think Verlander will get votes for the MVP, but I think ultimately the Cy Young will be his. The question, I think, if you're an Astros fan and you're into MVP awards, is does this Mike Trout surgery, which is going to end his season at 134 games played out of 162, is that enough to open the door for Alex Bregman to win the MVP of the American League? Who Alex Bregman's going to wind up playing probably about 155 games, 156 games, with stats that are in the neighborhood of Mike Trout, quite honestly. I mean, Trout's leading all of baseball in OPS, 1.083. That's on base plus slugging percentage.
Bregman's 1.004.
If you're up over 1,000, you are an elite, elite, elite hitter. And Bregman's night last night bumped him over 1,000 for the year.
The two biggest things that Bregman has going for him this year, and a lot of this comes down to how much do the individual voters value this stuff. One, durability compared to Trout, because Trout's done for the year. He's had 470 at-bats to Bregman's 521, because Bregman's played in 146 games.
Yeah.
And
he's going to play in about a dozen more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got these. You know what? Damn baseball reference. I'm trying to read baseball stats sites. I go all dyslexic on everything.
That's okay.
But then the other is just simply the dominance of the team compared to the Angels. How much credit do you get in baseball for being on a good team, for being on a really, really good team, and being in some ways the best player on that team, or at least the best position player on that team. This is what I would ask you. Mike Trout's fielding versus Alex Bregman's fielding. How much of that tips Bregman in your favor? The fact that he's a third baseman versus an outfielder.
Not just third baseman, but he's had to play a lot of shortstop because of the injury to Correa. That's what I was going to add to your, you made two great points. I was going to add to that by saying the versatility that Bregman brings to the table of being able to play either position on the left side of the infield.
Yeah.
When, let's face it, when you're on a team with Carlos Correa, who breaks a rib because of a massage, that you have Alex Bregman who can slide over and play a more premium position in the middle of the infield right there is huge.
I'll give Correa a little bit of credit. Correa actually had a little bit of a loose and fun moment about his performance last night.
Shut up.
I was telling you, he did. He's joked about how he couldn't find the strike zone to save his life. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Was he 0-for-3 or 0-for-4? Over 3 last night.
He was 0-for-3.
But he said he kind of joked around about how he was lost out there with the strike zone. He just needs a couple more at-bats. That's all fine and good, and we'll have fun with it right now. You got 2 weeks, buddy. 2 weeks.
That's it.
Get it straight.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So do you think Bregman's got a shot at this thing?
Yeah, I think he totally 100% does. I think Bregman is a guy, too. I think because of his approach, and I'm not talking about his social media approach or anything. His approach as a professional, I think he gets a lot of respect around baseball.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Word's gotten around about what a baseball nerd he is, that he just is a constant film junkie, that he continually refines his game. I think even the improvements he's made during the season, when he realized he had to be a little pickier with his pitch selection, and that improved almost immediately. Like, he's the consummate professional. He is what, one day they'll talk about him the way they talk about Michael Brantley, where he's a professional hitter.
He'll be Uncle Alex?
Yeah, yeah. The problem is I think Brantley almost gets a little bit more respect because he's so serious.
Yeah.
So I think people look at him and think, wow, he's just all about his craft. Bregman is all about his craft, but at the same time has a fun side to him.
How many Astros, boy, I love the MVP. I like the MVP in baseball so much more than the MVP in football because of the voting process. The MVP in football, for those who don't know, basically the 50 writers who vote on this stuff send in one name and that's it.
Right.
There's not a 1 through 5 or a 1 through 10. I think the NBA, I think, is 1 through 5 you vote for. Baseball, it's 1 through 10, which I think is cool. Like, you really get a feel for not just how the writers feel about the tippy top guys. I mean, that's all you get in football is, okay, well, this is how they feel about the best 2 or 3 guys compared to each other. And that's for the whole league, not AFC and NFC. In baseball, you get a much better feel for where some of the players on your team fall in the spectrum of guys in their league. So I think it's 30 writers who vote, 2 per city in the league, in the AL. So if it's 30 writers who vote and they each vote for 10 guys, how many Astros do you think garner at least a vote, at least get on the board, at least get one 10th place vote for most valuable player in the American League?
Okay, so there's somebody that thinks that they're at least the
10th most valuable player. How many Astros wind up getting votes?
I would say, let's see.
Because usually there's about 25 or 30 guys that wind up with at least a vote.
I'm trying to factor in how much injuries are going to play into this year.
We know Bregman will.
Right.
Let me run through the names.
Well, no, because I think Springer
will get votes.
Yeah, he'll get votes. I'm just saying because the injuries would affect him a little bit, but he'll still get votes.
And by votes, I mean, just so people are clear, by votes, I mean, I think there's a couple guys that'll put Springer 8th or 9th on the board. Because his numbers are still, even with missing those games, his numbers are eye-popping.
Is Brantley going to be
Brantley will
top
get votes.
10?
Yeah, he's been in the running for the batting title. He'll get votes.
Yuli.
Springer will get votes. Yuli will get votes.
Yuli, especially given his surge in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Because they'll look at his numbers and think, yeah, but he really came on strong.
That's 4. Does Altuve get votes out of respect? Are there a couple of writers that put Altuve 9th on the MVP?
I think so.
I do too.
Yeah.
I think Altuve. That's 5. I think Cole and Verlander.
I think Altuve would be the same thing for the people that are paying attention. You look at the first half of the season compared to the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And they'll look and say, okay, well, injuries obviously were an issue. And after that stint on the IL, the second stint on the IL, he really got together and he's looking like himself. So, yes, I think they will put him.
Yeah, again,
because he'd be one of those guys where they'll say, well, of course he'd be in the top 3 or 4 if it weren't for the injury, so I'm still going to put him at 10.
All we're asking is for one person to put him in the top 10. That's all we're saying. So that's 5 so far. Bregman, Brantley, Springer, Uriel, And Altuve, I think Verlander and Cole are both going to get votes. I don't think they're going to finish in the top five or anything, but I think they're both going to get MVP votes. Would you agree with that? The two top Cy Young candidates?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here's the big one. We know Correa's not going to get any votes. He's been too banged up. Does Yordan Alvarez get MVP votes? Are there writers out there that look at Yordan Alvarez?
Does he usually go with the DH? How many DHs
have won the MVP?
Yeah.
Well, Big Poppy won it, I think, at least once or twice. I'm pretty sure.
So I'm thinking, but for non-actual candidates, are people throwing them in for seventh, eighth, ninth?
You know why he's not going to get votes? Because he's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
They'll look at it. They'll go, he's Rookie of the Year. He came up in June.
Yeah.
Even though he's been incredibly valuable, I think if he had enough at-bats, he'd be leading the league or among the league leaders in OPS. So I'm going to say, you know what? No, someone's going to vote for him. Someone's going to get cute and give Yordan Alvarez like a ninth place vote or something. So there you go. I'm giving him one. You agree or disagree?
I agree. Fine. I don't like it's. Is somebody going to vote him for 10th place in the? Sure, I'll go out on a limb and say yeah. That's our.
Seth says yes. So that's eight. But no. But I guess if I'm trying to make a point here, my overall point is they're going to have eight guys that could wind up getting votes for MVP in the American League.
Mm-hmm. That's getting at least 10. I don't. But it's not really a vote for MVP if you're voting somebody 10th.
But they'll show up on the ballot.
They'll show up on the radar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's eight guys is a lot. I don't know if I can remember a team. I'm not going to ask you to go back and do the research.
Yeah.
But I may go look something like that up today and see what the most players that a team has at least gotten onto the ballot.
You know what I don't like talking about this stuff? It makes me nervous is that it I feel like it gets a little too much into the Team of Destiny attitude where people start thinking, oh, of course they're going to win a World Series.
Am I jinxing the World Series by doing this simple?
I think Astros fans definitely are not in that mode because they've seen the weaknesses. Like, if you know how you're not going to win the World Series if you don't win the World Series. You know what's going to happen with the bullpen. You know what might happen with your fourth starter if you need to use one. It's that you kind of can foresee it. Yeah. So people, I don't think people are overly cocky at all. They know about the existence of the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
It's about as stacked as you can get reasonably. Without being absurd, that's how good they are.
They're really,
and they're by far, they're the favorites to win the World Series. They got about a 33% chance of winning it, which some people might say, wait, no, they should be 70%. That's double what anybody else is right now.
Yep.
That's how hard it is to win a World Series. The favorite, by a long shot, has a 33% chance of winning.
You did some film study on the front seven for the Texans. Might the pass rush, even without Jadeveon Clowney, still be okay this year? We'll get that answer from Seth Payne next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So, Seth, you reviewed the offense a little bit earlier. Now we flip over to the defensive side of the ball.
Charles Omenihue might have the potential to be a really good football player.
That'd be nice as a fifth rounder.
I don't look, so far from what I've seen, my snap judgment on him from what I've seen in training camp and then through his first performance, appearance in an NFL game in week two versus the Jaguars, is that I think he can be a very productive football player. At this moment, I don't foresee absolute greatness for him or anything. I don't know if he's that type of an athlete, but he's a really big dude that uses his hands really well. And when I watch him play, I think a lot of guys like Aaron Smith, he was a defensive end for the Steelers forever.
Yeah, I remember
him.
He's
a really productive player.
Yeah.
And wasn't an all-pro type of guy or anything. He wasn't that kind of an athlete. But he was really strong. He used his hands really well. He rushed the passer well enough, but he wasn't like a silky, smooth mover. That's what Omenihue looks like so far, which would be really nice to get out of a fifth rounder. Where he looks best right now, at least where he looked after one game, where he looked best rushing the passer, was as a left defensive end. So when he's lining up in nickel or dime, really where JJ lines up.
At least somebody has. Unfortunately.
Except we saw it a few times in this game. Omenihue lined up at left end. I think a couple times when JJ was taking a break and it wasn't on the field. I'm trying to remember if there was a time where JJ lined up inside while Omenihue was at left end.
Oh, I don't know if while Omenihue was on the field.
No, JJ lined up. They moved JJ around. JJ moved it. He played some right end.
And
he played inside
too.
Right.
He pumped Whitney inside a couple times.
So, and I think you're going to see more of that out of JJ. But Omenihue as a pass rusher, I think is best so far on the edge. Cause I've seen a few people say, well, hey, there's that interior pass rush you wanted. Not yet. Because he didn't do much in the game. Now, he didn't have a lot of opportunities. He didn't have a whole bunch of snaps. But the real good work that he got done, like his sack, he was playing left end. And boy, on that sack, that strip fumble, which watching from the sideline, I thought that it was Scarlett that got the sack the first time.
Because he made most of the heavy contact.
Right. There. Well, what Amenihu did a few times in this game was he has a really good bull rush. Like I said, he's country strong. He's not from the country. I think he's from a suburb of Dallas.
He is, yeah.
But he's country strong. He might as well be from rural Mississippi or something. Because he bull rushed the right tackle back and had real good presence of mind that he wasn't going to get around the tackle. He had kind of expired the pass rush. And he just reached around and swatted the ball out.
Right.
He's got really long arms. And you know, and a lot of times guys have long arms but don't know how to use them. Amenihu really knows how to use his arms. So I got
long arms and I'm not afraid to use them.
You can see him just,
you think that's what he was saying?
As opposed to the people just walking around with their arms flopping around all over the place.
Worst trash talker ever.
Excellent.
Hey, listen, man, I got long arms and I'm not afraid to use them.
Just flails it at you like spaghetti.
He's slapping you like one of those foam noodles at the pool.
Yeah. I've got long arms and I'm advertising an automobile sale outside of
those big inflatables.
We've got deals on insurance. Got a Amenihu out front of your tire shop.
For those who don't know,
waving his arms.
Picture those big inflatables, those cylindrical inflatables with the floppy arms. Seth is doing that with his arms as he's talking.
That
right
needs
now.
To be a Amenihu sack dance. Do the inflatable the dancing. Yeah. You got these big Alonzo Spellman arms. Go ahead and use them. Just flap them around like that.
The worst nickname ever. The inflatable.
Can you imagine one of those inflatable things trying to bench press? If you were a human body with the inflatable promo arms, how quickly you'd cave your chest in.
That's great.
So he actually looks like he can bench press 225 a bunch of times. So I was excited about him. I'll tell you what, Zach Cunningham, and I talked to one of our listeners about this earlier this week, because I was making the point that Zach Cunningham is attacking the line of scrimmage in a way that looks way more ferocious. Like, he's just, I feel like he's reached that point in his career where all of a sudden everything's just clicking for him.
Good.
Because, and this listener brought up that he was a leading tackler on the team last year. Okay, great. He's an inside linebacker in a 3-4 defense, and he runs around a lot. Yes, he's always been active. He's always made a lot of tackles. It's different when you come up and he's like a Jack Lambert. Like,
yeah.
He's good. And I bring up Lambert. He's much more athletic than Lambert was. But because he's kind of, he's got a different body type for a 3-4 inside linebacker. He's tall and
he's rangy.
He's almost lanky looking.
Yeah.
He's svelte. He's so fast.
Yep.
But he's really attacking the line of scrimmage. He made a couple plays in the game where he kind of had to duck under and sneak his way through the line of scrimmage to make a tackle from the side to make a nice form tackle. That part of it was real. Like, he really flashed in this game. The run defense was really good.
A nice blitz.
One thing I would say is, because I know O'Brien actually brought it up on his own because nobody had asked about the run defense and how good it was. The thing that it made me nervous was, yes, the run defense was good, but especially on that second to last drive that was a field goal drive that the Jaguars had, yeah, you were stopping the run, but Fournette was gashing you in the passing game.
Yeah, when they got him out on the perimeter.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So that's great to load it. That's why I get nervous sometimes when they take too much pride in their run defense.
Yeah.
That's awesome to have good run defense, but not at the expense of passing defense.
They're very fortunate that the Jags didn't figure that out until the fourth quarter of that game.
Yeah.
When they got Fournette out of the clutter, he ran well. I know that his reputation is one of a battering ram, but he looks a little sleeker this year, and he looked good
yeah.
on those plays you're talking about. Back-to-back plays in the passing game. They got him out in space.
Well, I think the thing about Fournette is he's never had that sudden acceleration where I never really felt like he was going to be a battering ram the way his body type would have you mm-hmm. look. He's a guy that needs a little bit of a head of steam to get going, which you get when you catch it out in the flat and you can get running.
That's right.
Yeah, he had a couple of moments as a receiver there that were kind of embarrassing.
What about Jacob Martin?
Jacob Martin, there's something there. He is
one of the guys they picked up for Clowney.
He's fast and he can bend the corner on pass rush, so he's just a flat out speed threat. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him to know what his weaknesses are yet, but he's definitely going to be an impact. I think he had a pressure early on that wasn't really evident from the TV copy, but he forced a bad throw, and I think we're going to see more of him. That would be. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, and I got to go back and watch Clowney and see how Clowney's been doing in Seattle. So far, I'm feeling way better about whether or not they can replace Clowney. There's something
in what you mean overall, or in a certain respect.
In
the pass rush or in the run game.
Well,
just
I think the combined overall.
Yeah.
The run game is still going to be a concern, but like I said, being the number one run defense in the NFL, it's nice, but it's not going to win you a championship. It's not going to win it if it's at the expense of your pass defense.
Right.
So I think that with Clowney, the one thing that he provided is he provided an interior pass rush. And that's something that so far, none of these guys, even though they're getting a push up the middle, it's not the same as getting somebody that wins fast up the middle. So DJ Reader, yes, he gets good push. Angelo Blackson gets good push. Clowney at times would just completely wreck the offense up the middle. So I just got to watch for a little while longer and see if there's more guys that are wreaking havoc the way that Clowney would wreak havoc at times. Because right now, as good as Whitney's been versus the pass, we haven't quite seen that versus the run. So the whole combo deal, I don't know where I stand on it right now.
For what it's worth, I watched Clowney. I was watching the Seahawks game when we came in this morning. I watched the condensed coach's version before the show, just the plays that Clowney was on the field. First of all, he's only playing about 65% of the plays right now for Seattle, so he's not on the field every down like he was here. He was a non-factor against the Steelers. A lot of it was they were running away from him. They were chipping him. They were doing some double teams on him and stuff like that, but he wasn't wrecking any games there. And it's funny because the narrative with him going to Seattle was, well, now he's finally going to be playing defensive end in a 4-3. And boy, he's going to eat now because he's doing what he was drafted to do. You know what Seattle does on third down with him? They put him
stand
over
him
the
up
guard.
Over the guards,
they
yeah.
stand him up
I think
over the guard.
I honestly think that that's not a bad thing for him. I think he should actually relish that because he's a lot of defensive ends aren't good at rushing inside versus guards because it's too cluttered. They don't have space to use their athleticism. He's actually good at that. But I do think, but I would urge caution in making the snap judgment after two games because I think you could say the same thing about J.J. Watt. So
yeah.
Then the next argument is, okay, well, get rid of J.J. too. The defense will be awesome, right? It's more nuanced than that.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah. They got 30 cents on the dollar for Clowney.
Yeah.
I'm not here declaring the Clowney trade a victory of any sort. I'm just merely pointing out that it's like last year with the Texans. It took him three games to get untracked here, too. He missed week two.
Yeah.
He managed to get a 15-yard penalty. Oh, by the way, he did jump off sides in the Seahawks game.
Yeah,
the fourth quarter
jumping off sides. Those are the ones that really, I couldn't really, as much as I was defending Clowney, whenever anybody brought up how many times he jumped off sides in the fourth quarter, that's relatively indefensible.
It is. Last thing on your film study, Whitney Mercilus won Defensive Player of the Week this week in the AFC. I'm sure by and large because he put numbers onto a stat sheet. Are you seeing things from Whitney and watching him that go beyond the stat sheet that say, man, he's really dialed in this year?
Yeah, the one thing he did early on in the first quarter was the Jaguars lined up in an empty formation, no backs. I don't think there was a tight end in the core. And Whitney recognized what was going on and what the splits of the receivers are, and he called off, I think the Texans had a blitz called, and he called it off. And they snuffed it out. The first read that Minshew had out to the flats was not there, so Minshew just pulled the ball down and ran. So that's kind of that veteran stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. But Whitney basically caused a 3-yard quarterback run on that play by getting everybody into the right defense.
There's an interesting text we'll get to in the final segment about the Ring of Honor for the Texans and a particular player. And also, there is a suburb of Houston that was ranked the fifth most romantic city in the United States. I think we're both going to take umbrage with this. We will do that. Final segment coming up next. Well, Seth, I think you put this in the rundown. It's been in there for a little while.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
I feel like all the morning music stations probably went with this a month ago.
Yeah, I feel like the Venn diagram of their listenership and our listenership don't cross over too much.
Yeah, you guys don't be going listening to no stinking
musics and talking about relationships and stuff.
That
stick with us on the meathead stuff over here.
That blonde gal there, that Taylor Swift. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need no Taylor
She's
Swift.
She's talented and whatnot, but
look, I don't know who's big today, the Natalie Imbruglias and whatnot.
What that means.
Natalie Imbruglia. She was awesome. She's Australian,
yeah.
Remember her?
Yes.
Yeah.
So new study, where to find a romantic partner. There's a website, it's called EliteSingles.com, and they did a data study.
Like Joe Flacco Elite? JoeFlaccoSingles.com.
If I go look at some of the pictures, some of them may be the same sort of elite that Joe Flacco is
as
a quarterback. Sporadically elite, we'll call it that. 150,000 singles revealed the 25 American cities where people most strongly agree with the statement, quote, I bring romance to my relationships.
Oh, okay. So this isn't like the cities that are most romantic because they've got a Leaning Tower of Pisa or the canals or anything beautiful
canals,
or anything
that's what
like
I'm
that, right?
For, right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. It smells like jasmine in the air.
Right.
There's not Christmas lights everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
No. These are people that are thirsting for romance.
These are just people that say that they're sappy romantic.
Kind of jocking themselves a little bit. Like, okay. Yeah, I'm super romantic.
Yeah.
The first four cities on the list, you can be like, you know, whatever. Boynton Beach, Florida. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of old people that live in both of those places.
Myrtle Beach also is just very touristy, like family tour. Lots of miniature golf there.
Yeah. Miniature and regular golf there, which to me, if you're out there playing golf, you're the opposite of a romantic. You're trying to get away from me, lady.
Yeah.
It's weird. Cypress, California. I'm not even sure where that is. St. Cloud, Minnesota. Where, let's face it, for like 10 months out of the year, all there is to do is be romantic
with
each other.
Not a lot to do, right? Yeah.
Number five on the list. Sugarland, Texas.
Sugarland. I feel like the name Sugarland brings something to it almost. Give me a little sugar, that whole.
You think?
Yeah, yeah.
It puts you in that frame of mind?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably, I bet that phrase has fallen out of favor, what with the Me Too movement and all. Give me a little sugar? That's a little demanding, is it not?
Like, that's that depends on what your relationship is with
the person. If you're saying it to your wife flirtatiously or anything. But I feel like it was when I was growing up. When I lived in North Carolina for a while, it seemed like, give me a little sugar.
Really?
Used to be a comment.
You should test it out in the hallways.
I was living in the sticks in North Carolina. That might have been like, I think if you said, give me a little sugar to a 14-year-old when you were 14, you were married like within a week.
Yeah.
That was a shotgun wedding.
I feel like it could mean a lot of things depending on what part of it. If you're in a bad part of town in some big cities, you give me a little sugar.
Yeah.
You wind up with a kilo
That's
of coke.
True. That's true. I got the hell out of North Carolina before I got married off at the age of 15. I go see. It would have been me and my moonshine operation. In my
now that I would be there for a Seth Payne moonshine operation. So Sugarland's fifth on the list.
Do our listeners in Sugarland feel romantic?
I don't know. If you're from Sugarland, you live near Sugarland, text in 713-572-4610 and let us know if you're feeling romantic. The other ones, see a lot of Boca Raton, Florida. Isn't the average age in Boca like 82?
People get pretty romantic when they get older.
I guess.
They focus on the things that matter.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be really romantic when I'm always, you know what makes me smile? What gets me a little sentimental is when I see an older couple that are still holding hands, still obviously in love with each other, still, I like that. I like to envision my wife and I like that.
See, I like seeing an older man with someone who's clearly a mail order bride holding hands. That to me is romance.
He's like, yep,
that's
I blew
2019
it all. I blew
for
it
me.
All and I don't care because my kids are bastards.
<It's> 2019.
My kids thought they were going to get it all, but I'm giving it to Vendela here
What's
instead.
Your what's your wife's name? I don't even know.
I can't pronounce it.
She can't speak a word of English. It's the best relationship I've ever been in. Pembroke.
She writes it in acrylic. I can't read that name.
Pembroke Pines, Florida. Doesn't even sound like a city. It sounds like a subdivision.
These are all in Florida. Well, you know what's interesting is
three
of
the top seven are from Florida.
A lot of those retirement communities also have extremely high STD rates. Sam Darnold would fit right in.
Because people
go at it with reckless abandon.
Well, and it would make sense because, you know, a lot of times these are things you can't get rid of. So the older you are, theoretically, you've accumulated them over time.
That's true.
You know, like luggage and things in the attic or in the basement, as it were.
Put that on the questionnaire when you move into your assisted living facility, right?
Yeah.
Please list your
STDs.
Sometimes I visit my grandma and I try to set her up with guys because my grandpa's been gone.
Great.
My grandpa's been gone 5-6 years now.
Like, basically throwing her in front of the gonorrhea bus.
This one guy, I'll tell you what, I almost played the heavy one time. I was up there and this guy, my grandma's 92 now. This
this
88-year-old whippersnapper was like ridiculously chatting up my grandma to the point where I'm like, dude, I get to see her twice a year. Back off. All right, buddy.
Okay. Separate yourself from the situation. How was his game? Was he spitting?
No, it was awful. He was doing magic tricks. Not even good magic tricks. I'm like, she's not a child at a birthday party, dude.
Ate her balloon animals.
No, he was. It was at her birthday, actually. It was at her 91st birthday.
What?
And he came around and was doing these tricks. And it was one of those things that was kind of cute at first, but then he kept going and he kept telling stories. And then he started telling stories about how somebody tried to not Okay, this is where it got weird. He starts.
This is where it got weird.
Okay. So he's a nice old guy. He's doing all this. But then at some point, he started telling a story about how when he was a clown when he was younger, he did this birthday party, but then they refused to pay him. So at the end, he punched the father.
And an angry clown.
And I'm like, is this guy trying to shake us down? Is he waiting for me to pay him off? Because I'm about to punch him in the nose. I don't care how old you are. You're hitting on my grandma.
What was his go-to magic trick?
It was, it was some kind of sleight of hand. And his hands were not so slight anymore. It was one of those kind of like, where did that rubber ball come from that I could see the whole time as you were moving it over? I don't think my grandma.
Is that the card that you chose?
Yeah.
No. Is this the card that you chose? No. Is this one?
I think I'll give my grandma a lot of credit. She wasn't falling for it.
No, that's good.
She's into her own thing.
She's sharp. Yeah. Corona, California, number 8. Fort Worth, Texas, number 9. I have a son that goes to TCU. I'm glad to hear that he's going to get some lessons in romance.
Yeah.
Wilton Manors, Florida. Why do all these Florida places, they don't even sound like cities? They sound
like... Well, because they're manufactured cities. They're master planned communities where some marketing person comes up with this and they create the whole city out of nothing. Well, think about the Woodlands. Does that sound like a city? No, because it's a master planned community. Whoever that guy was, I forget his name.
The
Woodlands, which is now a proper city, started off as just this planned community.
I believe it was started by James Woodland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who won the Battle of Texas. Believe that's the case.
I think he was he's actually still alive. He was 3 years old at the Battle of San Jacinto.
That's right.
And he's now 147 years old.
He's like, I'm going to start my own planned community, naming it after myself, and we're going to call it the Woodlands. Farmington, Connecticut is on the list. It's on the top 25.
Yeah, I don't like these lists because it's all by some website that has some weird
algorithm
criteria
or
for how they come up. Look, Sugar Land isn't the most romantic place in America.
No, it's the fifth most.
It's not even the fifth most romantic place.
It says on here.
Nobody says, honey, I've saved up. We're going to Sugar Land.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.